Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Heavenly Father, let us extend our thoughts and union as we work to enrich the lives of our residents. Let our deliberations be free of rancor and filled with concern of others rather than ourselves. Let us plan beyond the obvious that we might protect our neighbor from the unintended consequences of shallow thought. Let us remember that we are the people serving, not they ours. Let us proceed in peace. Amen.
Good morning. I would like to call this morning's June 16th, 2020, adjourned. This is our regular June meeting, not the adjourned September meeting. Threw me off. June 16th, 2020, at 9 a.m. to order. May I have a roll call, please?
Ms. Sesich.
Present.
Ms. Flowers.
Present.
Mr. Gangler.
Here.
Mr. Giles.
Here.
Ms. Gilmore.
Here.
Mr. Greider?
Here.
Ms. Hendricks?
Here.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Prochaska?
Here.
Ms. Vickers?
Here.
Makes sense.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Is everybody here? All right. With a quorum being present, may I have a motion to approve the agenda as written?
Second.
Motion by Sesich, seconded by Gilmore. Mr. Keppel.
The new OMA laws have been signed in by the governor and the law, and the only thing we haven't been doing at our normal meetings that would be new to that law is that all votes need to be a roll call. I just want to mention that.
Thank you. With that, may I have a roll call to approve the agenda, please?
Ms. Sesich?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yeah.
Mr. Giles?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
All eyes. Thank you. Special recognition. I'd like to recognize Chad Lockman, the superintendent of the VAC. Is that the official title?
Yes, sir, it is.
And he's here this morning to recognize the 2020 Veterans Assistance Commission Veteran Memorial Scholarships. Floor is yours.
That's right. Good morning. I'm here today to announce and recognize for the record the recipients of the VAC's 2020 Veteran Memorial Scholarships. This year, due to a tremendous outpouring of community support last 2 years during our golf outings mainly, we're able to award these four scholarships. It used to be just one. The first scholarship is in the amount of $3,000. And the other three scholarships are each worth $2,000. To be eligible for one of these scholarships, an individual must be a veteran, spouse of a veteran, or the direct descendant of a veteran, and reside in Kendall County. Hmm. Before I announce the recipients, a bit about the scholarship. It was started in 2012 after the passing of Gene White, former VAC president. In 2016, two additional scholarships were added to honor Arnold Bitterman. He was the founding member and the first superintendent of the VAC, along with Steve Barrett, who had just passed away earlier that year from cancer due to his service in Vietnam. 2019, the VAC added a fourth scholarship in honor of Jim Likeness. He's known throughout the local veteran community as Flash due to his love for photography. He frequented veteran-centric events in the community with his camera to include our golf outings the last 2 years. Very helpful. In speaking with the recipients personally, each volunteered their goals for the future and their plans to attain those goals, along with the immense gratitude for having been awarded a scholarship. I can say with confidence that the veterans to whom these scholarships honor would be very pleased. The first recipient and the most distinguished is Ms. Hannah Schaefermeyer. She's a 2020 graduate of Yorkville High School, and she's going to be attending the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the fall. Second recipient is Ms. Hallie Jones, a 2020 Yorkville grad who will be attending the University of Kansas. Third recipient is Ms. Kelsey Edwards, a 2020 Plano graduate who will be attending Western Illinois University pursuing a career in law enforcement. The fourth recipient is a Ms. Isabella Rodriguez, 2020 Yorkville High School graduate, going to be attending University of Alabama at Birmingham. So on behalf of the scholarship committee, the commission as a whole, and my staff at the VAC, congratulations to these young women, and I wish all of them the best of luck in their future endeavors. Thanks for giving me the floor.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you coming out and doing that, and I wish that they could be here to celebrate this as well, but given the environment, obviously, it probably didn't make a lot of sense to do that, but I at least wanted to take a minute to recognize that and for you to I appreciate you saying that about each of the individuals who the awards are named after, too. I'd be curious, do you know if Jim Likeness's videos and pictures are, you know, cataloged somewhere? Because he was at every parade and event in Kendall County for as long as I can remember, and it'd be kind of interesting. I hope it's saved somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
For posterity.
We've got something to golf outings, but I'm sure that's yeah. His work is saved also.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, and I don't know, did I see a hand raised or otherwise? Okay. Okay, yeah. Yeah, so thank you. Trouble. Yeah, worth it.
We've had trouble the last couple of years generating interest in this scholarship. Scholarships continue to grow. It's free money. It'd be a big help for some of these kids, so feel free to tell your friends about it. Veteran, spouse of a veteran, or direct descendant of a veteran, more than welcome to apply. It's about the first of the year, mid-January, the applications will come out, school counselors are contacted.
When you say direct descendant, is there a cutoff? Does it have to be, you know, son, or can it be grandson, or?
Grandson, great-grandson. Okay. The birth certificate, the bloodline, we're game to award the scholarship.
Great. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chad. Appreciate it. As long as you're here, is the golf outing rescheduled, did I see?
Tentatively rescheduled for July 23rd.
23rd.
So things are looking good right now. I believe foursomes are out with carts. We're actually going to be partnering with CASA. They had to completely cancel their golf outing. If there's another great cause in the county, CASA is it. We'd love to put our name with them. If you're looking for information, July 23rd is a tentative reschedule.
Great.
BlackBerry.
Awesome.
Thank you again.
All right. Thank you. I have one more special recognition this morning that is not on your agenda. I want to recognize Forest Preserve President Judy Gilmore. I have put a drawing, is that the right way to call it, up on the front chair here that she did. And I had asked her, I know she's been somebody that has drawn with watercolors and or not watercolors, with colored pencils. And I asked her some time ago whether or not she could do the old historic courthouse for us. And during COVID, I think you found yourself maybe with a little more time in your hands. And she researched, different looks of the historic courthouse and went with the one from 1864. You'll notice it has a little bit of a more reddish hint to it, which was the color at the time. And it doesn't have the wings, which are currently on there. So to me, it lends a little bit more of that historic nature to it. So just wanted to take a minute and recognize your artistry and thank you for doing that as well. So
thank you.
Yeah, good job, Judy. That was really cool. You wanted to say anything about your work?
Well, that was the courthouse before the fire, and then after the fire, they changed the cupola on the top.
Okay.
But this is a better version of it.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's really neat. So thank you. Public comment. You'll have 5 minutes. Just say your name for the record.
Todd Miller, your film. I wrote my name down on your sheet. Yesterday, I about 12:53, I sent an email to Dwight Wall, chiefs of police in the county, and the mayors in the county. They were all on that email. It was some research that I had performed. In regards to looking at and investigating a citizens' oversight panel for local law enforcement. I think the county might be in a good position to take the lead for that. There was an attachment on there, 18 different locations, municipalities, there's one county in there too, Richland County, South Carolina. Most of them are municipalities that are of size and of where we're at or smaller. One was as small as like 12,000 people, so it can't be done. That town was a Battleboro, Vermont. The information in there to contact the individuals at those local government bodies is present. I particularly like research that Eugene, Oregon did. I call that the gold standard. It was very exhaustive. there's several different ways to do this. Some go as far as like Key West, Florida, where they have actual subpoena power. And there's others that are a lot less formal, let's call it that, but allows citizens to have some insights into how law enforcement does their job, and if there's a complaint, then besides it being handled internally by internal affairs, it allows regular folks like me, other folks that aren't in law enforcement, to actually see and review what the management at the law enforcement agency oversees, and they actually have an opportunity to make some type of judgment. It's something that is a current topic at the moment. It's something I think we should look at. We have very good law enforcement people in this county and have very few problems. But if one would arise, then I think it is something that should be looked at, and citizens should have the opportunity to review what was reviewed by the law enforcement management agency. So anyway, I encourage you to look at that email. It's a Word document with a bunch of hyperlinks. It'll take you to those municipalities or that county. Phone numbers are in there, there's some email addresses in there. If you need some more help or want me to help drill down a little more on that, I'm prepared to do that. But it's something I think that we've moved, and that's something I've always kind of pushed to move this county to be more open and transparent, and this is another phase or stage of doing that. And so anyway, I encourage you all to look at that. Give me a call if you want. I'll be glad to discuss it with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? All right, I would like to open the public hearing for the proposed downstate small business stabilization applications funded by Community Development Block Grant Funds. The Downstate Small Business Stabilization Program is a program from the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity that is providing grant funds for 60 days of working capital for small business during the COVID-19 crisis. The program is supported by Community Development Block Grant Program funding for the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and is designated for assisting Illinois communities to meet their community and economic development needs. Non-essential, for-profit, private small businesses with 50 or fewer employees are allowed to apply, with some exceptions. The Downstate Small Business Stabilization Program requires applications to be submitted through a unit of local government in order to administer the funds to the businesses. A participation agreement between the county and the business will be put in place to define the partnership. Funds for this program will not need to be repaid, provided the businesses remain open for at least 60 days, or reopen and retain or reemploy permanent jobs in the next year. Today, the Home Shows, Inc., HSI, is applying for $25,000 for the Downstate Small Business Program. The Home Shows, Inc. produces the Chicago Home Show and the Chicago Pet Shows. The Home Shows, Inc. was established in 1986 and incorporated in January of 2005. When the executive order was placed in effect, HSI was in mid-season of events. As such, the firm lost approximately $115,000 in advertising costs, overhead, and outstanding accounts receivable revenue that could not be collected for the balance of the shows. Going forward, HSI still needs to produce the events that were missed, which means buying the advertising for a second time and covering the overhead expenses. This $25,000 grant would go towards salary and benefits for two employees, rent, utilities, and telecommunications. Jessica Keenis-Zuli is the executive producer, VP of the Home Shows, Inc. And do you know if is she on the call?
We've got 17 people on the line. I'm not sure. Jessica, are you on the phone? Jessica, you
okay, thank you. Is there anyone who would like to comment on this? I'm going to close this public hearing. May I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Salute.
Motion by Prochaska, seconded by Sesich. Okay. May I have a roll call, please?
excuse me, Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler? Mr. Giles?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sesich?
Yes.
All ayes, thank you. Old business? New business? Elected official reports and other department reports. Emergency Management Agency, Mr. Bernucci. Good morning.
Good morning.
We just voted on it.
It's nice to see what you all look like.
Huh?
Since I've never been here before.
Can't hear you.
Mr. Chairman, I'll give you the COVID portion of my report. If you want more, just let me know.
Okay.
We've been getting stock in for PPE from the state of Illinois. I even, in particular, every week or so, I order things to keep our supply up. We've got a 60-day supply right now, which is recommended by the Illinois Emergency Management Agency. Just recently, I made some, give you an idea of where this material is going. I went down to Lisbon Grade School yesterday and to the Kendall ROE, which is right next door here, to deliver last Friday. I'm still pushing out the situational reports every day except Sunday. The state of Illinois was requesting additional reports during the period of civil unrest between, I had to give a report to ADM and ATM besides the regular center up and stop that. I've been attending IEMA Region 3 meetings about PPE and about COVID status three times a week. I don't know which board member asked me this on a committee meeting that if I had been to the entity of FEMA public assistance grants seminars, I went to one and couldn't get into the second one, but I will. There's quite a few people with quite a few organizations around Kendall County have applied for public assistance grants. I was talking with Mr. Kelly about that recently, and I was kind of surprised how big the list was. And I'm going to be approaching the Finance Committee here this week about PPE. State of Illinois has said, and they've changed their direction on this a couple of times, that they're going to end supplying the counties with PPE on July 15th. So after that, it'll be up to us. Now, it's not gonna be an exorbitant amount of money, but I'll be able to come up with a number if we continue to need PPE and what that will be.
Any questions for Roger? Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Sheriff. I feel like today is the greatest day.
We're on the lucky.
Yeah.
I did file my 6-month report with the county clerk's office. Looking at it, there's really no really surprises. As you can see, we're on track for basically a common year with the exception of last week. I did want to make one note under the 6-month budget results. Both budgets are currently below the 50%, but in the patrol section, in the sheriff's budget, there was back pay in there for some contract negotiations that was not part of my original budget. So and I will continue to monitor this, and as we get close to the end of the year, I may request a budget amendment to cover the cost of back pay, which is not originally in the budget. I believe it was in another part of the budget. Scott, is that correct?
Sorry, the back pay?
Yeah.
Yeah, we tried to include that in elsewhere.
Yeah. So, but I just, if my budget shows above, I want to be able to tell people why. So, other than that, I would be more than happy to answer any questions about the 6-month report. So there's no really surprises in it. The corrections has not settled their contract yet, so we hope that we'll do that this fiscal year, so that maybe an adjustment later on as well, or maybe not. I did report to the board last time about the amount of hours that we overtime hours that we put in around the time of the protests and riots and looting that went on in some of our neighboring towns. In that about 7-day period, we spent about $32,000 in overtime. So that overtime line item for patrol was looking really good until that happened. But still, I'm optimistic that we'll continue to trend and maybe not require any adjustments to the budget at all. So it was about $30,400 in the patrol side, which is the sheriff's portion of the budget, and then corrections was about $2,600.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you.
County Clerk and Recorder, Debbie.
My revenue report is in the packet. We are waiting for the governor to sign the election omnibus bill, which will create a lot of changes for us and cost us a lot of money, so prepare for that. Changes with regard to vote by mail, there's changes on election day with creating another polling place. So a lot of changes in a lot of different areas we're going to be forced to do. So once he signs that, we are getting ready to act. We have contacted vendors to help us mail out the vote by mail applications with our envelopes to actually mail the ballots out to them. We have contacted vendors to try to set up some things, have some ideas in place on how we are going to handle all of these changes, because they will happen quickly. Once he signs the bill, we have time frames that we have to accommodate all of the changes within. So just kind of preparing for that. Again, he hasn't signed it yet, but if anybody has any questions, I can attempt to answer them the best I can. The State Board of Elections is reviewing it, and they had informed us that they will be sending out guidelines for us. So on top of us, our own interpretation as a county clerk, as our association, we also will have interpretation from the State Board of Elections on how to complete everything and follow the law.
Jay?
So do you know right now, are you going to have to request one of those mail-in ballots, or are you just sending out the applications to everybody that's a registered voter?
We are going to be required to mail them out the application for a vote by mail. And the proposal that's to be signed is for the 2020 primary, the 19, okay, and the 18 general. Those are, but okay. It is my thought to send them out to every registered voter.
Okay, so we hear a lot about possible fraud with this system. So do you know what kind of safeguards you're going to have to put in place?
That is also included in the bill. We need to have a panel of three judges that will review the signatures on those when they come back, and they have to be unanimous. They have to match according to these judges unanimously before we can accept those.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Keppel.
Audra has her hand raised.
Ms. Hendricks.
Yes, I would just like to first start by saying that study after study after study after study has proven that mail-in voting is extremely void of fraud. I am nonetheless glad to hear that we're going to have some checks and balances on that. Also, this is something that we brought up in finance, and perhaps Chairman Greider or Kellogg can speak more to that, but we did bring up a concern about funding for that, because I attended the Council on Foreign Relations webinar concerning lessons that were learned from the Wisconsin primary, and one of the concerns that they had that they were taking great pains to express to everyone for local elections is that mail-in balloting requests went up by 80%. So that we need to prepare for that, and the costs that are involved with that, as well as tallying for that. So we've been discussing that in finance as well, and I'm wondering if you have any idea at all about the funding that's coming down the pike for that.
Mr. Kellogg?
So we began discussing it in finance, and Mr. Keppel and I discussed prior that we're going to wait for Debbie to get the information she's mentioned just now before we go further into this. So we're kind of letting Debbie catch up on what the law is and the translation, and then come and talk to us, so we haven't further about it.
And part of this bill that's going to be signed, there is there's a grant. So what I will need to do is keep track of all of the expenses that go into everything to accommodate us to be able to do what the law requests. So we will get funding if we follow the law. I mean, if we do something wrong, then there's stipulation in there that we won't get our funding. So we are going to get some help. I just don't know to what amount we will receive, but I will be tracking that and submitting everything.
Will that become a discuss when you know more instead of doing what
ifs? Yeah, because I just don't know right now.
What ifs, if we can get real data at our meetings, so we'll dream up solutions that we don't need.
Okay.
Ms. Sessage.
Debbie, so will the time frame for for early voting be the same time for the dates on early voting? And when you say we have to have another polling place open, are they going, is that because they're going to limit the amount of people that they let in at a time? Or, I mean, have you heard any kind of what are...
Well, we have to, all the polling places have to follow the CDC direction. No, we have to create a new polling place that will allow anybody in the county to vote there. So instead of going to your polling place that you're designated to go to, say you're in Oswego and you want to go vote, we have established this polling place where anybody in the county can go. Just like another early voting site, but on election day.
Is there rationale for that?
You would have to discuss it with the legislators. I don't know. But you had several questions that I wanted to answer. So on election day, we have to establish that. What else did you ask? Oh, the early voting dates are the same. Our hours here for our permanent place is increased another week. We used to have to be open till 7 the week before. Well, now we have the week before that. We have extended hours in holidays and weekends, longer hours.
And it starts.
I don't know the date off the top of my head. The 24th is the first day. September 24th is the first day for early voting here in our office. But it's the 2 weeks before the election where the hours are extended.
And so we probably should plan for, I'm looking at Matt Kellogg and Scott Keppel, the facility, because if they're going to have to maintain social distancing here in this building, I have seen presidential year lines out the door around the block, and they aren't social distancing. So if they are, we're going to have to do something with the parking lot, or and I'm not sure.
I mean,
we got time, so just think about it. Mr. Keppel?
I'm just going to say we've had a good test case with the treasurer's office set up for the tax payments, so we've got a good idea how we can filter people through safely. Sometimes the line does get longer for voting, so we'll have to take that into account.
And I think we're going to need space for people to sit to check in the vote by mail ballots. I don't know where I'm going to put a panel of three judges and all of the envelopes and the ballots that come through within this building. And having it be across town when our main people are here at this building, I think would create some issues. So I would like the board to kind of keep that in mind. Like, I'm going to need somewhere to put people because they can't all fit in voter registration.
I have a question.
Mr. Prochaska and then Ms. Flowers.
I've heard talk about drive-through voting. How many of those sites are we going to need in the county?
Well, what they're calling is curbside voting.
Curbside voting.
We've always had curbside voting where you would call ahead and say, hey, I'm bringing so-and-so to this polling place so that judges could be prepared. We have to have two judges go out to the car, one of each party. So that is still something that we have to do. I mean, the judges just will have to be prepared, and people in their cars might have to be prepared to wait. You know, because we need two judges to be able to go out and do that for security purposes. I love my job.
Ms. Flowers?
I love my job.
Ms. Flowers?
The mail-in voting on the city, mail-in voting to everyone?
That's the thought, would be to include all registered voters. We don't want to miss anybody. We just want to make sure everybody has that opportunity and to help with, you know, the whole stay at home and spreading of this virus, just for ease of our voters to offer that to everybody.
Makes sense. Ms. Sessage?
When we look at this, it feels really huge, obviously, because it's such a big change. It feels like we don't have enough time. It's like we should have started this a year ago. What about the staff? Have they, Natalie and them downstairs, have they sort of voiced any concerns about the upcoming election with, all these people coming through and then being exposed as well? And, are we just listening and maybe making sure that we're taking care of some of those needs as well?
well, we are going to need additional help. I mean, that's our biggest concern right now, is we can't do it all ourselves with our current staff. So we are kind of keeping in mind, we are going, if, you know, anybody knows anybody that's willing to help, you know, kind of, we need a, we have a list of who we can reach out to. I know the party chair is going to submit some names, or I'm under the impression that they're going to submit some names of people that can help with vote by mail. So looking forward to that, so that, you know, it's not all on us to come up with people to help us.
Mr. Keppel.
Member Vickers has her hand up.
Ms. Vickers.
Before they actually apply for the vote by mail ballot, are we going to have a mechanism where they can actually request that online after you send them the letter, or do they have to mail in the application?
No, that is another part of the bill. They can submit it online as well.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Prochaska.
By submitting it online, do they, would they be required to submit their signature as well at that point?
They're supposed to sign it, yes. Okay.
So it could be scanned and sent in?
It may.
Okay.
How do you know that it's the individual that's requesting it as opposed to somebody who's taking a fistful of them and requesting it on behalf?
Because we have to compare the signatures with the signature on file.
Okay. So by doing it online, they have to do a scan, and it's not like they go and they click a button.
Well, they're supposed to, yeah.
In theory.
I think we do have to take electronic signatures, but when it does come back, we'll have that panel of three judges to verify the signatures on the certification sheet, that certification envelope that comes with the ballot.
I think Kate and Will already do online applications for the ballot. So that's, some counties were already doing that.
Yeah, we will have to. As well.
Right.
It's just a lot to think about.
It does seem very daunting.
Ms. Gilmore.
So is the governor going to give you any extra money to do all this extra work?
We're supposed to be getting some funding. Yeah, I just have to keep track of what costs are associated with this whole thing. And then I have to submit a grant application and get reimbursed for it.
Good. Ms. Prochaska.
So I know that a vote by mail ballot costs more than us voting in the same day, because there's postage and all.
Do we have to pay for the postage?
Yeah.
I mean, on the way back?
No.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah.
But I'm like, not, yeah.
It doesn't have to be prepaid,
so
postage.
So we have an influx of new vote by mail applications. Will the state be reimbursing us for the postage or and other?
I'm going to submit everything, all the costs associated with enacting all the new laws and whatnot.
What if a request comes back for somebody who's not listed as a registered voter? Does that count as a...
I think it's rejected, and then we have to contact them. There are rules we have to follow when that happens.
Okay. Mr. Kellogg.
Is there any change to the date after the election which you can accept late mail-in, or, you know, as we...
I think it's still 2 weeks.
Okay. There'll be more votes potentially coming in late.
Uh-huh. After election night, so, yep. So...
a good chance that elections won't be decided for 2 weeks after.
Potentially three.
Three. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Certified.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mr. Keppel, did you have something else? Your eyes are expressive.
Jim and I are brainstorming locations to help out and work with Debbie to be able to get the accounting done.
Jim Wyman?
And able to filter through all that mail that comes in. So we're looking at all the options.
No,
Ms. Flowers?
If elections aren't decided for potentially 2 weeks after the election, we're supposed to be sworn in on December 1st, right? Will that affect when they were sworn in?
No, the election is not certified for 21 days after the election date, so that would be the 24th. Anyway,
okay.
So that doesn't change that.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. That's all I have. More to come?
For right now.
Yeah. Wow.
Good job.
Yep. Thanks, Debbie. Mm-hmm. Treasurer, you are in the middle of a big job. Ms. Furco?
Good morning. Good
morning. Maybe you could sit at Audra's desk if you wanted.
Yeah, Audra's
probably. Is this better?
Yes.
Much
better, thank you.
All right. First installment was yesterday. Collections are coming in fairly strong, which is a good sign. There were 852 total waivers collected, which was a very small amount considering we sent out over 40,000 tax bills. So we did a distribution last week of about $30 million, and in a couple of days I'll start my second distribution. So that they will have those funds by the end of the month. And that should be fairly equivalent to what last year's distribution was. So,
Mr. Kellogg.
Two things. On the automatic withdrawals that people sign up for, what day does that pull? Does it pull yesterday or is it?
It should have pulled, like, we usually have it pulled, like, in the late cycle.
Okay.
So it should be out of your account this morning.
Okay.
And we set it for June 15th, so it comes out okay. Probably.
Somebody call me about that.
Late, yeah.
Second question on the COVID relief program we had with the mail-ins. How many letters, roughly, or how many?
852 waivers.
852, is that?
Yeah.
Thank you. I missed that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
Anyone on the phone have a question for Jill? All right. Thanks, Jill.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good day. Clerk of the Court. State's attorney.
I don't have much. One, just a reminder, we're doing traffic court, misdemeanor court at the Yorkville High School. That seems to be working well. It's a little different, being in the auditorium versus the courtroom, but it is working. Our domestic violence response team has been in full operation for 6 months now, so we're anxious to start collecting some data and see how we're going with that, and we've been doing some Facebook videos regarding domestic violence. So. Partner up with a couple people and they seem to be pretty popular, so check those out. Other than that, unless there's any questions, I don't have a depressing report like Debbie, so
not yet.
Any more than normal,
she's
I guess
our
I should
favorite
say.
Any more normal.
Unless there's questions,
mail in informations or anything.
Hmm? We don't have mail in court yet. We do have Zoom. That's about the best I got.
Any update on when, or any thoughts on when jury trials might resume?
Jury trials are scheduled to start in July. And we've been going through, I know Jim Smiley and his staff have been there, Judge Pilmer, public defender, myself, looking at how we're going to accommodate that, how we're going to do jury selection. Obviously, when you bring a big group of people in to select from, that's going to be a little bit more of a challenge than it has been in the past. Where juries will deliberate or wait during the trial, you know, how we do that, it's going to be difficult, but we have to balance the fact that we have people that are in custody that have a right to a speedy trial, so we are going to accomplish that. Mindful of people that have issues from a health concern that come in and having to deal with that too. So it's a balancing act, but we'll figure it out. And we've got three set right now for July, which would probably be our max that we could do. We usually can do 8 or 9, 10 a week. We're probably looking at 2 to 3 based on those numbers, just to maintain that social distancing.
Hmm.
Concerns.
Thank you. Coroner, Ms. Purcell, good morning.
This is working here.
Yeah.
So you should have my report in your packet. Just over the month of May, we had 39 total deaths, which is kind of a lot, especially if you look at May of 2019, we had 21 deaths for the month. So. It's increasing quite a bit. I got it for you, Jim. And that's, overall, it's been an increase, because if you look at where we are fiscal year to date, we're at 204 deaths, and if you extrapolate that over the year, it's 408. And the entire year last year, we had just over 300 deaths. So we have seen quite an increase in mostly the natural deaths, but more people just going home and dying in their homes, going on hospice care and whatnot. We had one overdose death during the month, one autopsy, one toxicology case, and authorized 25 cremation permits. And really, that's about it, unless anybody has any questions. We do, for the month of June, we have an intern in our office who is going to Western Carolina University, but she lives in Yorkville, and she's up for 7 weeks. She's going to be in our office, and she's working on an archival project. Her degree is actually going to be in forensic anthropology, so it's going to be kind of exciting to see, and it's going to be something that we're kind of going to go back to the public for, because there's a lot of records from the late 1800s that are, they refer to things like the Johnson Farm, you know, and I'm like, oh, what's that mean? You know, where is that? So it's an interesting project.
Yeah, that sounds neat.
Yeah.
Is that something you'll make available to?
Yeah, we're going to try. I was talking to technology, and they said it's a lot of stuff to put on the website, so I'm not sure exactly how we're going to maybe piece it out or try through Facebook or whatnot, but we're going to try to piece it out, I think, is probably going to be the way that it's going to be the best way to get it out.
Okay. Ms. Sessage?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say that I was over at Jackie's office and saw that book. It's beautiful. So if you have a chance to go see what she's working on, what's her name, the girl?
Maggie.
Mm-hmm. She's literally, I mean, it's this beautiful cursive handwriting, and she's piecing it together and almost having to look at, you know, certain words.
Old words.
Scroll would work, because it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's, we just don't write like that anymore, clearly. Mm-hmm. But if you have a chance to check it out, it is pretty neat. But I did want to ask you, as far as the COVID deaths, when somebody mm-hmm. dies, are they cremating bodies? Because you just said the
they're doing whatever the family wishes are. There's a mixture.
But can they be? And can they be buried even?
Well, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure how that worked. You know, I read an article recently that they're actually bodies now that they are finding with the Spanish flu that virus is still
there.
You know, within the
yeah, as far as I know, I think cholera and bubonic plague are the only ones that they really aren't real thrilled with being buried.
Buried, yeah. You said that the cremations were up to 25. Is that
normal? We had 25 this month. Last year we had 11.
So
yeah, I mean, but we have had 39 deaths compared to 21 last year. You know what I mean? So we just overall everything is just
so everything is up.
Okay. Correct.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Health Department. If anybody's on the line, Supervisor of Assessment Sandy, you provided us with some information.
Yes. For those of you who aren't actually in person here, I did email this to everybody this morning, so you've got it, and then Valerie did disperse it in the room for me. This is an estimate of what I think the 2020 EAV is going to look like. I'll just kind of go through it. You've seen this before. So we start with what the 2019 final gross EAV was. From that, you have to deduct the farmland and the farm building EAV, because that is not subject to equalization. So that will give you what the non-farm EAV is for 2019. The projected tentative equalization factor is 3.64%. So if you multiply that times the 2019 number, you come up with a equalized for 2020. You then have to add in the farm buildings and the farmland. The farmland increase is kind of a guess. It's usually about 6%. On the actual farmland increase, so you add that number back in. I've estimated new construction at a little over $51 million, and estimated BOR, which is board review, reductions at a little over 11, almost 11.7. So bottom line is the 3.915 billion is my estimated EAV. If you divide it by the previous year, it's about a 4.76% increase. So I think this 3.9 is either a little higher or real close to what we were in 2009, but I have to look at that. I haven't checked that information. So if it's not, this is probably the highest EAV we've had here ever. So things are continuing to grow.
Mr. Prochaska?
How does a new construction compare to last year?
That is a little bit more than what we had this past year. And I know that there's some new commercial projects out there that should be coming on this year. So I've kind of taken it into consideration. Along with, I know there's a lot of residential buildings going on, development going on. They're trying to fill up these subdivisions that were platted, you know, 10, 15 years ago or whatever. So there's a lot of that going on now.
Mr. Kellogg?
I guess I'll report. I wasn't at the Farmland Review Committee meeting that happened Monday, but the group decided to question or not approve the state's formula recommendations for the farmland increases. We're going to look into it, or how do you want to?
Yeah, we have to do. We have to. The committee has to actually come up with their own idea of what they think the numbers should be. They don't agree with what the state actually has come up with. So I'm relying on, I am the chairman of that committee, so I'm relying on my other four members to come up with some data. We'll have to write an official letter to Department of Revenue. It has to be down there by August 1st, stating that we're appealing it. We have to have all our documentation along with that. If they don't agree with it, we either take what they said, or we can file with PTAB. I'm not sure how far this is going to wind up going, but through some looking at the numbers and that, it was their determination that that's what they had wanted to do. So
nobody's ever questioned this calculation from what?
I have no idea. I really don't know of anybody who ever has.
A couple of the members of the committee called me, and then reaching out to people at the University of Illinois Economics Department and also the Farm Bureau Association, because U of I does some of the calculations that the state puts into the formula, and they were questioning it, and none of those groups had heard of anybody questioning this. And the reason the committee members said, you know, we questioned it is because it has a cap in the formula of 10%.
10% of the median PI, yeah. Right.
And with that cap, we would never reach the downturn or less than 10% until 2032, I think.
Well, the discussion that they had originally back in 2014 when they decided they were going to implement this, because the process used to be 10% on all the PIs across the board. That actually made the gap of between the poor soils and the good soils something around 30-1. They had started at a 2-1 difference. In order to correct that, they came up with this other procedure where they take 10% of the median PI and increase all of the soils by that number. So this year, I think everything went up somewhere around $35 or $36 an acre, with the hopes that they would eventually get this fixed by 2032, so in a 17-year period. I'm not sure, you know, if the math were to say, well, things, because it used to be they either went up 10% or they went down 10%. I don't know if the down 10% part is still coming into play. So it could be a substantial increase by the time we get to 2032.
The formula comes is pretty hard to challenge from what I read in the statute. So I think the committees, from what they told me, because unfortunately I wasn't there, was that they more want to question the formula and where it's going to land, because it, you know, using some of the numbers, it looked like it was an unsustainable number for taxes on farmland.
Right.
So that's, I reached out to the University of Illinois. I'm trying to get a contact, somebody who can do a extrapolation to say, here's where it's headed, here's where mm-hmm. the cap, and do some further research. And then another member of the committee is reaching out to Farm Bureau, and Farm Bureau's had serious concerns about this, I guess, since it was established in 2015 from what they said. So they're going to try and give some support to us, and it may be that they appeal it and there's nothing you can do because the formula is the formula, but at least we're standing up and saying this isn't right.
Well, I think it's not necessarily just the formula, it's the numbers that are actually yeah. plugged into the formula is what they're questioning.
They're questioning where those numbers come from, but in the statute it refers to specific government reports.
Right.
So you can't go get your own statistics, you have to rely on the Federal Department of Agriculture and different people for those numbers. So it's...
So is this a structural issue that comes from the state that would affect all counties and not just Kendall?
Yeah.
So are there other counties, other farm bureaus and other counties? Is the State Farm Bureau looking into this as well?
Yeah, the state from... I didn't speak with Farm Bureau. Kurt Schobert, who's on the committee, spoke with a State Farm Bureau representative, and they said there's been other concerns, but weren't aware of anybody refusing the number or appealing it. So it'll be interesting to see if other people... Yeah, okay, let's join and do this, or if everybody just accepts and moves on. So.
And it depends, I think, too, as to which counties have had their meetings already. So if you've already had your meeting, if you've already approved it, I don't think there's anything that those groups can do.
Right. Is there a due date? Like it must be done by?
On or about June 1st.
Oh, okay.
But we're a little later this year with all this COVID mess going on. So. You know, last year we were, I think, May 30th is when we had our meeting. Oh,
okay. So are they giving us leeway then?
Ms. Hessage?
Are they giving us leeway then because of the COVID issues? Or?
I don't know. That's the only reason our meeting was later this year was because of the COVID, because of the building being closed and so on and so forth. So I don't know that there's anything that will say, well, you didn't do it by this date, so, you know, you can't. If that's the case, then that's what they'll tell us, you know?
Let me get around to it.
Yeah.
So I saw this, the Farmland Review Board meeting was yesterday.
Yes.
Who's on that committee? What is that? Because I looked at it and it just had like a very small agenda. I didn't know what was.
Well, I'm the chairman of that.
Okay.
Matt Kellogg's on it. Jason Brummel, Kurt Schobert, and Pam Gegenheimer, because she's the board review chair.
And so what are you, I guess, how does that work? I mean, you're discussing the numbers and then approving? I mean, what a recommendation come out of that?
Yes, basically that's what they send us. The state sends us the information, we look through it, and then we either say yay or nay. And typically we say yay, but this year it changed.
I've been on the committee probably
because of
8 years.
Something like, well, you were there when I've been there 10, and you were already there, I thought. So.
Okay, I've been on there 10 years at least.
Yeah.
And typically it's the formula is the formula, and we joke that it's the most worthless committee because we just get the data and rubber stamp it and send it on, and it's a.
I don't know that it's the most worthless, but okay.
It's one of the most, probably.
We have 3-minute meetings where we literally.
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah.
And adjourn, so.
And that was going to be like kind of my follow up. Like, so what would you say nay to? I mean, would you?
That we basically disagree. We disagree with the numbers that they came up with.
So
basically,
then what happens after that? Then it goes back to the state, and they.
Right, we have to send a formal letter to the Department of Revenue stating that we are in disagreement, and we have to provide our information as to why.
Tell you to pound sand, or do they?
They can, and if they do, then we can file with the Property Tax Appeal Board.
Oh.
And we get to jump to the front of the line if that's the case by statute. So.
So you really have to know, like even with Mr. Kellogg, you have to know that is not a legitimate number at all, and that you have to have, I guess, evidence
right.
to back that up.
Yeah, and we don't. We're just saying, hey, we don't think this is right. If it's right, then it's right.
On,
you know,
because it was such a huge increase, or. Based on why don't you think it's right, I guess, would be the...
Well, essentially what it was is that if you keep going at 10% every year for the next 12 years, it's going to wind up being a very, very large number. Farmers are going to be paying somewhere
so
around 120...
for the decrease 10% when you had said that you didn't know if it was allowing for that?
If that 10% decrease is still there, then you could see that, but we don't know,
okay.
and they really haven't... the meeting that I attended back in 2014 that we had over at the Farm Bureau, I don't recall there ever being discussion about what would happen if that 10% decrease was still there. But, you know, basically when you know, they looked through the numbers and saw what the potential tax burden could be mm-hmm. per acre, it seemed unattainable they wouldn't be able to handle it.
Yeah.
That's what
fascinating.
It,
yeah.
So even if it's... Right now we're looking at 10%. If it's 8 or 6,
it's never that. It has to be 10%.
Oh,
it's always either a 10% increase or decrease on that median PI. It's never any other number than that.
So what would be the effect of the appeal here to decrease it by 10%?
I guess to make sure that the numbers are where they're supposed to be.
Yeah, I think it's more to question the process and the formula. One of the things that as I was looking at it yesterday, the curious thing is part of the formula, you're dividing by the mortgage interest rate for farmland. So as government, and it's in the denominator part of the equation, so as you know, the economy is going down, the farm economy is going down, and they're trying to lower mortgage rates to help the economy, it actually raises the tax calculation because it's dividing by that number. So it's counterintuitive to me to say we're going to help you here by lowering the mortgage interest rate, but guess what? It just bumped to 10% for next year. So
it's kind of the same concept of the PTEL, where as the tax base increases, that rate comes down, and as the tax base decreases, the rate goes up. So it's kind of the same type of situation you've got going on with that.
So what would be the better formula then?
I don't know.
To keep it the way it is, or you guys are...
Well, that's why we're reaching out to economists in Illinois to say, evaluate it for us, give some help to say this is where it extrapolates out to, and here's the chances of it going up and down, and then maybe it leads to somebody else asking, how do we do this better? And maybe people in Springfield don't care.
And actually, if it winds up being an educational experience, then that's even better, because nobody really teaches you this.
Because you got to, I mean, how many farm acres do we have in this county? You have to wonder that down south, you know, where there's, it's almost mainly rural counties.
Right, and because of the way they've changed this formula, the poorer soils are actually seeing a larger increase.
Really?
Right, because they were so low to start with.
I don't know why this is so fascinating. I'm sorry.
I have more information if you want it that I can provide you. I'd be happy to sit down and talk to you about it any time. So.
Well, in Kendall County, keep in mind, it's still 75% farmland.
Is it 75%?
Right.
Wow.
And our median PI is a 121. So the closer you are to 130, the better your soils are.
Huh.
So that's what our median is right there. So.
Anyone this boring committee became the most interesting.
No, I know.
Yeah, right.
I
want
to be honest.
And you know what? They are public hearings, but nobody ever. It's actually that one year we had two people show up.
Oh, you know, I saw it, and I almost actually came because I was really kind of interesting to see, you know, to see how it worked and what you guys were actually doing. So, yeah, that's interesting. So, all right. Well, thank you for the information. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Andy.
Yep. Made up for that 3 months I haven't been here.
Yeah.
I know. We noticed.
Yeah, you had it all wrapped into...
I know. I've been missed.
Senate Committee Reports. Finance, Mr. Kellogg.
I'd like to make a motion to approve an addendum to Master Power Supply Agreement between Kendall County and Allegro Energy Illinois LLC approved on June 2020.
Second.
Your packet is attachment E, page 52.
Motion by Kellogg, seconded by Prochaska. Mr. Keppel.
In the past, there wasn't much value in adding Ameren to the agreement. It was mostly ComEd. This only affects 115 customers. This goes to that agreement from the last board meeting about making us a green community and getting us a payment. We will get an additional $1,200 a year, and we'll get that guaranteed rate for the Ameren customers as well. So it's just something that Chris found, because before, with that small group of people in that part of the county, it's around Millington and Newark, that it just, there wasn't any value in adding them. It wouldn't really help them, and it didn't help us. But now there's an opportunity to do that, so we're just attaching it to the already approved agreement.
Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Mr. Giles?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sussich?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
All ayes. Thank you, everyone. Administration, HR, Ms. Flowers.
I'd like a motion to approve the fee agreement between Kendall County and the Horton Group for a term of 3 years commencing on July 1st, 2020.
So moved.
Motion by Sussich, seconded by Giles. Mr. Keppel, sorry.
This is a three-year agreement. We've had a lot of success with Horton. We had a reduction, and we had a flat renewal from Blue Cross Blue Shield, which also we switched back to Blue Cross, which made a lot of our employees happy. They've been good at helping us out. Bob Jones recommends us doing this as well. He's been often contacted with them, as he does. They did the benefits in the treasurer's office. The first year is flat. The second year is 5%, and the third year is an additional 5%. Jim Webb did note an email to the board. I'll let you know too. This covers all the services that they started to provide us when they started with us day one. They've since added some additional services for life and like an Aflac type solution, and those they do get a small commission on, but they don't get any commission on dental, life, and the medical that they did when they started with us. So I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that's the only real difference between the last contract and this one.
Great, thank you. Liz, anything else to add?
Everyone's been very happy about this, and I think it was a unanimous decision for the committee. So,
thank you. Roll call.
Mr. Giles?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greuter?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Essich?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Motion carries, all ayes. Thank you. Thanks, Liz. Planning, Building, and Zoning, Mr. Prochaska.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion for the approval of a resolution granting a three-year extension to the recording of the final plat of Subdivision 4, Camelot Farm.
Second.
Motion by Prochaska, seconded by Kellogg. Mr. Kebble?
Mr. Hostelmeyer is on the phone if there's any questions.
Mr. Prochaska, anything else to add?
No, this is an ongoing extension that we have been granting every 3 years.
Aye.
Something
Ms. Essich?
Oh, is that the only reason?
Okay. Roll call.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greuter?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Essich?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler? Mr. Giles?
Yes.
All ayes. Thank you. Mr. Prochaska?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion for the approval of Petition 2011, request from the Kendall County Planning, Building, and Zoning Committee to repeal and replace Resolution 2009-22 pertaining to the composition of the Kendall County Stormwater Management Planning Committee by making the composition of the Stormwater Management Planning Committee equal between the county board districts.
Second.
Motion by Prochaska, seconded by Gilmore. Mr. Prochaska?
Mr. Chairman, this proposal will change the current composition by adding two additional members and making the District 2 side of the county have equal representation to the District 1 side of the county. State law says that there has to be equality between the membership of the municipal and the county. We did reach out to the state's attorney's office for clarification on this matter, and they recommended that this proposal was the safest course of action.
Thank you. Do you want to rebut Mr. Prochaska, state's attorney?
Are they just appointed then?
They are appointed by the board chair.
All right, roll call.
Mr. Greuter?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Essich?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Mr. Giles?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
All ayes. Thank you. Mr. Prochaska?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion for approval of Petition 1943, request from the Kendall County Historic Preservation Commission for amendments to the Kendall County Historic Preservation Ordinance pertaining to the definitions, Historic Preservation Commission powers and authorities, terms and appointments of the Preservation Commission members, nomination procedures of landmarks and historic districts, alteration, construction, demolition, and maintenance provisions, penalties, and application fee.
Second.
Motion by Prochaska, seconded by Gilmore. Anything you want to add from our discussion on at Cal?
This item was discussed quite substantially at the Committee of the Whole. This proposal actually increases the amount of protection for the property owner over the current ordinance on the books. Currently, there is no definition of a supermajority of the board in the ordinance, though it still allows third-party designations. It does set forth a $500 application fee, which can be waived at the property owner's wishes and consent.
This also makes us CLG compliant, which we have not been in the past. Is that correct?
Correct. This does make us CLG compliant. That does, though, require certain extra things that our planning office will have to do, such as filing a report. And there is also potential grants that we could be getting that our staff will have to prepare. But this also allows people that do designate their property as historic an option for a property tax freeze for 10 years while after they've done improvements to their property.
Does it then kick in after those 10 years at that current rate?
It slowly phases up.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Roll call.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes. Yes.
Mr. Kevin?
You only get one vote.
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Hessage?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler? Mr. Giles?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes. All eyes, thank you. Animal Control, Ms. Sessage.
Okay, so Friday I met with Jim and Mr. Keppel and Laura Pawson, who's our Animal Control Director. The building looks great. If anybody has been in there before we did these renovations, you will be pleasantly surprised by it. So I think our staff is going to be much happier. Obviously, you know, the animals are going to be, I hope, happier. We are going to, I guess tentatively, I think, Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, they're going to go into, IT is going to go in today at some point and start kind of breaking down the computers and that type of thing and setting them in the offices, and they're going to try to move a lot of the furniture then tomorrow. We're going to be open, obviously, to the public tomorrow because our staff will, you know, be coming back and cleaning and things like that. I think our main grand opening, or that we'll do like a main move-in, maybe even a photo op with possibly a ribbon cutting next week, Wednesday. We're going to have our meeting, our committee meeting over there, if we can get everybody, or get our committee there for Wednesday's meeting. So we can do kind of a tour and walk through at that point. We're kind of keep the, you know, the social distancing.
Probably make that a committee
of
the whole.
I'm sorry?
Probably make that a committee of the whole.
We can, if more people want to go. So we can do that if that's.
Just like we've done on some of those where you set it up both ways just in case.
Yeah. We're going to go over some of our business, obviously, for the committee, but it's more just reports. But it would be an opportunity to maybe get a picture out there with, you know, the new building. I was hoping to have the trailer gone. We did come up with a little bit of a snag on the trailer, and I think Sheriff can speak to that a little bit more. I think Jim has been working on that as well, so they're ready to take it. We just need to get all of the things in place to actually make that move happen. So, Sheriff, I don't know if you want to speak to that, or even if Jim Smiley can speak to it, but we're working on it. I don't know if it's going to be gone by next Wednesday, right, Jim? We were really hoping to have it gone.
We're trying to set it up for next Monday. When we put the trailer in, we tried to lower it down as low as possible because we wanted to add the handicap ramp to it. My recollection was the wheels were only removed, but when we checked into it, the axles were actually taken off too. So we're in the process of working through that from the people we bought it from to get those back so we can get them installed, and shooting for Monday, hopefully, to have that. I don't know if it'll be moved by then, but we hope to have at least the wheels back on so it's ready to get out of there.
And I don't know, Sheriff, if you can talk about how you guys have devised a plan to move that down to the gun range.
As soon as the wheels get on, it will be assessed by a local company that actually we anticipate they may move it for free for us down to the range. So we've been down there, the range down in Lisbon, we've been down there to mark out where we need that at. And as soon as that's in, then we'll make arrangements with ComEd to get power hooked up to it. And we're also having a storage container delivered down there too. So as soon as that stuff starts happening, we're going to build a pavilion down there to keep the sun off the people when you're down there, to try and
you know, minimize any possibility of any heat stroke when you're out in the range, because it's wide open. There's no cover, so you're in the sun where the other range. Pardon?
No wind down in the hole?
We're up at grade, and there's 30-foot berms around it. Little wind movement and no shade, it can take a toll on you, so we're all going to put up a pavilion. But all that money is in the budget.
What are you going to use the trailer for down there? I've had people ask me, and, you know, I'm assuming paperwork and things like that. So if you can maybe explain a little bit about what you're going to use that trailer for.
Yeah, we're going to use a trailer for a shelter, number one, and then also any classroom work that we would do down at our other range. We used to have an indoor trailer down there, and that fell in disrepair. But that's what it was used for before. So you can kind of bring people in away from the noise. We split the groups up. You got some people out shooting. You get the instruction inside the trailer where there's a sound barrier, and then you can flip-flop the groups in order to go and do the training for that particular session.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad it's worked out that the sheriff can use it. You know, obviously it worked out for us for animal control while we needed it, so it's kind of a win-win for us as a county. Thank you, Sheriff. I appreciate that. So I think the noticeable things in the building will be we've added windows that weren't there. If you guys remember what it looked like before, it was like a jail cell, really, because there were no windows. It was like this concrete building. And that has made a huge difference. The HVAC system is now in there. What are some of the other big items, Jim, that really have made such an improvement in that building? It's when you go in, there's no smell right now. Obviously, there's no animals in there, but it was really horrendous before. And a lot of it was because when they tore down the old ductwork, there was molding stuff inside the ductwork, right?
The existing roof insulation we found was falling down, which was an unknown extra, but actually will aid for the long term. We put R24 in the ceiling now, blown in insulation, so that'll help us both cooling and heating season. All new ceilings throughout. It has the most modern lighting probably of any building that we have. It's all LED, both inside and outside. There's even remote units for turning them on and off and dimming the lights and things like that. We put new air conditioning systems in for the office area, and never had a ventilation system in the kennel area, so we have a ventilation system that actually pulls in outside air and blends it with either heated or cooled air. So we have now basically two systems in there. We have a air-driven system, and we still have the in-floor heating system in that area. So when the animals are laying on the floor or something, they can get heat off the floor. Like you said, another extra we had was the remaining ductwork that was in there. It had was internally lined with insulation, and the thought was that that's pulled in odors over the years, so we elected to take that out too and basically put all new ductwork in. And then the entire place was epoxy painted, every wall, all throughout except for in the garage area, and we redid all of the epoxy finished floors in there. So.
Thank you. So yeah, the Jim's team over there has really done an excellent job. Jim GC'd this whole project. I think it went really, really well. I hope if we can get this meeting together for next Wednesday morning, that you can make it, and if you can't for Wednesday, then at least be able to go over there at some point. It really turned out nice. We actually added a door in between from where the lobby area is to the back, so hopefully that keeps down some of the barking noise for our staff up front and in the front office, besides the windows added. So I'm really pleased with it, so I'm excited for everybody to see it, and hopefully next Wednesday we can get some folks out there and still keep our social distancing and safety in mind, of course, but you know, maybe we can have some people walk through it and see it. So
Mr. Keppel.
So animal control is closed on Wednesdays. That's one of the reasons we picked to move the furniture back tomorrow. We'll be out doing some prep work this afternoon. We only actually have one animal that we're housing at Dr. Slapp's office right now. We've been really pushing to get into rescues. And because of COVID-19, a lot of people are fostering, so rescues have been taking animals more than they have in the past, which has been great because then we don't have to pay a huge bill to have somebody hold our animals for us while we are doing the renovations on the building. So hope to move the animals back at the end of this week. The animal control staff is starting to clean up the areas and prepare for that after all the painting and things have been done. So letting the air circulate a little bit as well. But yeah, the hope is to have the committee meeting next week, and happy to walk you through if any of the board members, anybody wants to see the building, you know, contact myself or Laura Poston, and we'll make sure that somebody's available to take you through. We're still working out exactly the details on social distancing over there, so there may be, we have to wait a little bit because we have, the lobby is not gigantic, and we do have some limited space in there with all the staff, so you know, just bear with us if you have to wait a little bit to get a tour, but we'll be happy to take people through.
And that's the other thing, is that we had to, when we were over there looking at it on Friday, we had to add maybe the, you know, the plexi or the glass barrier, the cough and sneeze shield. So those aren't up yet, but you know, hopefully we have some temporary things that until we, Jim can get those installed. But you know, obviously this is, it's the new normal, right? So you know, we do all these things and we were like, oh wait, what about this and what about that? So there's some things that we need to add, obviously. But you know, it's coming along, and it's, we're just really excited. I can't say it enough. We're just really happy with the turnout for sure. So it'll be good if we can get everybody over there next week. So
thank you. Mm-hmm. Highway, may have a motion to approve the agreement between the County of Kendall and the Kendall County Forest Preserve District regarding conveyance of land located on Elder Main Road.
Second.
So moved.
Motion by Hendricks, seconded by Sussage. Fran, I know you've been patiently waiting on the phone to talk about this. Do you want to talk about this?
Not really.
I could have Dave do it. He's sitting there.
Well, this has been a long time coming. We have been obligated to transfer this property to the Forest Preserve for many years as part of our tree mitigation for the Elder Main Road project. So it is finally happening, and I think the Forest Preserve was handling this piece of business today as well.
Yeah. Dave, do you have anything you want to add? As long as you're here. Dave Gertz, the Forest Preserve Director, for the record.
Good morning. Just we support the recommendation, the conveyance of property. It's a very high-quality wooded parcel that the district will be picking up, connected to Hoover Forest Preserve. So we've been working very well with Highway Department and coordinating the construction activities and, of course, all the mitigation work that's going on. So small matter and a little extra for Hoover, which is great. So
thank you. Roll call.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sussage?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Mr. Giles?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greiner?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
All eyes, thank you. Economic Development, Ms. Hendricks.
And we've done this a couple of times now, so we'll just get right to it. I'd like a motion for the approval of a resolution of support for Home Shows, Inc. Downstate Small Business Stabilization Program application.
Motion by Hendricks, seconded by Sussage. Any additional discussion?
Go ahead.
Roll call.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sussage?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Mr. Giles?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
All eyes, thank you.
I'd like to make a motion for the approval of participation agreement between Kendall County and Home Shows, Inc.
Second.
Motion by Hendricks, seconded by Gilmore. Any comment? Roll call.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sussage?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Mr. Giles?
Who is that?
Mr. Giles?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes. I think Mr. Gangler is being dismembered.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
All eyes. Mr. Keppel.
Can we ask
as a side note, I wanted to mention that We've submitted several of these to the state. None of them have been awarded to Kendall County, but there's also none that have been awarded to several other counties. Only about 1 million of, I think they pledged 25 million, has been distributed. So only the first wave has been done. We did get, we hear back from DCEO every time we submit these applications, and we are just awaiting to hear back on whether or not any of ours have been approved. We also haven't heard if any of ours have been denied. So it's just a flood of things going into DCEO, and I'll report back as soon as I know more.
Ms. Prochaska.
There's so much I'm slightly disturbed at there, that A, they're not giving us the timeline, B, they won't tell us, we don't know if any of ours have been rejected. When we started this process, we originally thought this is for support and bid for businesses in need, and the state has still not been making these decisions.
Have any of our municipalities received them?
No, none in Kendall County have been awarded yet.
Okay. Yeah, that's terrible.
And to my knowledge, none have been denied yet.
All right. Special committee reports. Northwest Water Planning Alliance, Audra.
So the last meeting was a couple of months ago now, and the United States Geological Survey came in and gave us a presentation specifically relating to the newest emerging critical problems. And I went expecting to hear that it was again going to be supply. But instead, it's a rather alarming increase and discovery of contaminants, several of which we literally don't know how to get rid of out of the water and are highly dangerous to human beings. I wanted to do a presentation here. This has already been a long meeting, and I'm going to be quite frank. There are a number of issues that are going to be a very serious concern to our entire county as we move forward, both addressing the supply demands that we're going to need to meet, but now also the contaminants. And to give you an idea, one of the contaminants that they're finding in virtually 85% of wells are contaminated with something that we don't want, be it pharmaceuticals, because 70% of Americans are on prescription pharmaceuticals constantly. So we're finding that septic systems, landfills, fertilizer, manure, are contributing to that, but largely unsewered development areas and septic systems are the largest contributors. But in addition, we're now finding PFAS, which is the chemical that's used, you might be most familiar with it, for nonstick cookware, but it also has several other applications, is highly carcinogenic and is now being found in 85% of the wells that were tested. And this is a big problem for us, and there's several others that are being found that we literally don't know how to get rid of. And so I think it would be a very good idea for us to do two courses of action here, and I present this now to the committee or to the board, and that is that I think we're going to need to put together a group of all the local municipalities and the county here as we move forward in water planning, because it's become critically clear that we are going to need to address two issues at once, both of them of equal severity, and that is both the supply and then how we're going to meet that demand and also provide clean water. The USGS said they would be happy to come and present to us, and I would suggest that we do that at a COW. And there are some grant monies that we would be wise to apply for and try to avail ourselves of, because the situation is actually getting pretty critical rather quickly. So I'm sorry that I can't bring better news to you. I myself was pretty concerned, and I can speak for the whole group when I say we were we left that meeting depressed. I'm not going to lie. We were all quite alarmed and actually expressed that. So with everyone's permission and agreement, I think we need to have the USGS come in and do that presentation for us. And I think it would be very wise for us moving forward to get a group that represents all of our municipalities and the county together to work on this issue as a group moving forward.
Audra, did they provide any handouts at your meeting?
They did not. I do have the PowerPoint presentation. I don't have it available to share here, because as I was going through to do my notes to present this, it became quite clear that it's just such a volume of information that we probably really need to have them come in and present. It's very serious.
We had, I'm trying to remember when we had Pete Wallers come out to to talk about this.
It's been at least a year.
Yeah, it's I wish I could bring you guys better news, but this meeting actually even caught me off guard, and I'm sincere when I say everyone left that meeting very alarmed.
Well, and I know that that's something that the mayor of Yorkville, Oswego, and Montgomery, they've been working on this for years, and they're getting louder with their discussion, you know, on it as well. And so I'm not surprised to hear what you're saying, I guess. We've been talking, you and I have talked about this for the last several years as well. And, you know, now it sounds like the time is near, you know.
It's here. I mean, we were thinking that we were going to have to worry about paying for the infrastructure to bring more water out. Startlingly, that's emerging as less important in making sure we can get these contaminants out of the water, because what they're finding is really, really harmful. It's microplastics down at miles deep into the ground. PFAs, miles deep into the ground. Shallow aquifers, people's private wells, they pretty much...
Oh, she cut out.
Thanks, Audra.
I don't know if she's done talking or...
I don't know. Scott, is she still on?
She's still on the call.
No, I'm done talking. I just think we really need to get a little bit more aggressive about this, and it would be wise for us to have them come and present at Cal.
Thank you. Kewa County Housing Authority, Mr. Pajaska.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This past Monday, the Kendall County Housing Authority opened our rental housing support program wait list at 10 a.m. We originally intended to keep it open till today at 4 p.m., however, we closed it by 8 p.m. last night because we had reached our maximum for the wait list.
What is the maximum? How many slots came open?
About 150. 50 applicants for one-bedroom units, 50 for two-bedroom units, 25 applicants for three-bedroom, 25 for four, and 25 for five.
Any questions on? Thank you. Their business?
Can I talk about the census for a second?
Sure. Ms. Vickers.
So we, obviously all of our plans changed on how we were going to do outreach for the census, and we had a lot of the materials that we'd ordered, and we've handed that out at food pantry and churches and several places throughout the county. We are currently third in the state. For our response rate, we're at 77.1%. Our 2010 response rate was 76.8%, so we've done better. And then I believe our final total response was about 83% last time. So we're pushing on getting closer to that anyway. But because we didn't use all the funds we had been awarded from the grant, we needed to spend them and do more outreach in a way that we could be socially distant. So we are doing yard signs and 4x4 highway signs which are being printed now, and we will be putting them up throughout the county. We have English and Spanish signs, and we want to focus a lot on the Sandwich, Western Plano, Minooka, Joliet, and Plainfield, because those are our areas where we've had less response. But the yard signs we'll be putting out all over. So once they're available, we'll let you know if you'd like to have one. We'll get one to you. And if you have places that we can put the signs up, especially the 4x4s or recommendations, please let Mira know, because we definitely need some help with that on where to put them all. So that's it. Thank you.
Nice. Robin?
Who's the other two? We're third. What counties are above us?
McHenry and Monroe.
McHenry is second, and Monroe County is first at 79.9%.
McHenry passed us.
We've been flip-flopping with them.
We're at 77.1, they're at 77.8, so we keep going back and forth.
No. Come on, Kendall, we need you.
Why is Monroe? Is it small, or what is...
I don't know what their census is, but they're
not
they...
It's kind of... They're kind of... I think they're... I don't think they're very large.
I don't think so either. And their response rate, their self-response rate in 2010 was over 80% as well. So this seems to be the norm for them.
34,637
in 2019.
Okay.
What?
43?
34.
34. Oh,
yeah. So that's why. And our other area that we don't have, our response rate is the lowest, is actually Neosse Township. So we need to maybe get some highway signs in there as well.
Maybe the representative from Neosse could help lead that charge.
Yeah, why is Neosse like?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Put a big sign out on the
phone. Mr. Kellogg, what's going on over there?
I'd like a full report at the next meeting about what's going on in Neosse.
We're going to blame you. So.
All right, thank you. Chairman's report. May I have a motion to approve the appointments of David Kellogg, replacing Flora Dearson and the Newark Fire District Trustee, expiring April of 2022. David Thompson replacing Flora Dearson, KenCom Executive Board, Newark Fire District Delegate. Pam Geggenheimer, Tax Board, review 2-year term, expiring May of 2022. Can I have a motion to that effect?
So
moved. Motion by Liz, seconded by Gilmore. All in favor signify by saying aye. I'm sorry, roll call.
Ms. Sessage?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Mr. Giles? Mr. Giles?
Yes.
Ms.
Gilmore? Tough to follow Gangler, isn't it, Tony?
Yes.
It is, I never know.
Yeah, we need to know where he's at.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers? Ms. Vickers?
Calling Ms. Vickers. She did her report.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, motion carries 9-0-1. Mr. Dearson, we're going to recognize it in July, so I'll talk more about him. He passed away in the last month or so. But longtime volunteer in our community. Public comment? Questions from the press?
No questions, Mr. Chairman.
Any need for executive session?
There is for collective bargaining.
We have a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of?
Collective negotiating matters between the public body and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees, C2.
So moved.
Motion by Kellogg.
Second.
Seconded by Sessage. Roll call.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Mr. Giles?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers? She's still gone. Ms. Sessage?
Yes.
Sorry.
All right. Motion carries 9-0.
For the board members on the phone, I sent out an invite for the executive session. If you
Ms. Heifluten.
Now we've
ready? All right. We are back in regular session. There's a motion by Kellogg, seconded by Prochaska. Roll call, please.
To adjourn?
Yep. Wow. Everything.
So you're governor.
Oh.
Okay, so it was Kellogg, Prochaska. Okay, Ms. Gilmore.
Yes.
Mr. Greider.
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks is gone. Mr. Kellogg.
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska.
Yes.
Ms. Vickers.
Yes.
Ms. Sessage.
Yes.
Ms. Flowers. She's gone. Mr. Gangler. Mr. Giles.
Yes.
All eyes, thank you for your participation. We are adjourned.
The meeting is adjourned.